Welcome back to the Stephen Reid Podcast. On today's episode, we have a very special guest. I'm joined today by my mum, and we're talking about all sorts of things, so I hope you enjoy. You are probably the person who has asked me the most amount of times to come on my podcast. Why is that out of interest?
Probably because it's a bit of a new phenomenon. I suppose.
It probably is, yeah.
For us slightly more mature people, because we're used to the medium of television and books. I mean, back in the day when I was younger, it was, I think I was 18 or 19 when we got actually could record television. So for 19 years, we just had to watch what was on when it was on.
It's strange though, because actually this is in the same format as just audio, isn't it? So it's like radio, really.
Yes.
But I suppose the power, it's now in the hands of the people who want to make the media rather than the, you know, the producers and the radio programs that are just being pumped out. So I guess it's a bit different.
Yes.
We're actually recording this back where we first started recording, back at my mum's house. And as some of you might know, I moved out of this house about 6 months ago, I think, onto my narrow boat, and there's much more you can find out about that on a recent video I did with Dave Erasmus, if you're interested, on YouTube. What's the thing you've missed the most about me since I've gone? Is there anything? It's okay to say there's not, I suppose.
I suppose all of us watching a film together. Possibly. I miss your cooking. I do miss that.
I miss the dishwasher.
I miss being... Well, I don't know. You sort of evolve with your children, really. Because you've become very independent. And you were very independent before you moved out. So... But I miss looking after somebody, I guess. Although I still got Jeremy to look after. We look after each other.
And Pepper the cat, I suppose,
and Pepper. I suppose we've evolved with it, I guess. And I think I would have missed you a lot more if you'd moved away.
But like, yeah, far away.
The fact that you still pop back quite regularly is really lovely. I mean, I remember the day we went up to, I drove you up to Burton on Trent to get the boat, and I was so upset and so emotional about it because I thought, well, this is it now. I'm never going to see him again.
I remember you saying to me, You will pop in and see us sometimes, won't you? And here we are a couple of months later and you're thinking, bloody hell, I wish he wouldn't pop in every couple of days doing his washing and his laundry. Yeah.
We've always been close, I think. And we've always got on reasonably well. We hold sort of the same values and things. So I suppose I'd like to describe it as this evolved.
Yeah,
and now you're an adult, and you know we've got a different relationship, really. I heard somebody recently say that you know, you start off being a parent and then eventually you become a friend, and whilst I'm still your parent and you come to us for guidance and things, we're more on an adult level.
Yeah,
which is the way it should be.
It's good. So, and I think you're right. I do have the choice now to come and visit you when I want to, or you rang me up, I think, earlier in the week and said, are you popping in at any point? Because I hadn't been here for a few days. So it's nice that actually having the space now means that I want to see you more, you want to see me more, and actually we plan time to see each other. And yes, I think that makes me, at least, a lot more appreciative and value our time together a lot more, which is great.
And I think the other thing is the positive of you moving out is you've moved out in quite an exciting way to sort of a novel way of living. That's not the run of the mill. And actually it's the positive I'm taking from it is it's really surprising where your children take you, because I knew nothing about narrow boats until 6 months ago, and now I wouldn't say I'm an expert by any means, but I know more than I knew back then, and it's opened up a whole new sort of new activity, a new, you know, you're always learning.
Yeah.
I suppose is what I'm trying to say.
You've been incredibly supportive of me the whole journey, really. And I couldn't have asked for better support from parents, because whilst you've been there to help me through the times when I needed your advice, or whether I needed maybe the potential of financial support when I was going to look at boats and I didn't know whether I would be able to get a loan that would cover it, and we'd have had discussions about how you could potentially support me in that, but also just the moral support throughout the whole journey. But at the same time, on very much a flip side, you've still given me enough time and independence to just go away and try it for myself. And I think you could have been a lot more worried about the fact that I was going down a really alternative route, and it's not the standard way of moving out, and actually there are risks that come with it. You know, you can't sink a house, whereas, you know, you could go and sink a boat quite easily, and that's my home down the drain. So yeah, it's been really good to have you been so supportive, and yeah, it's been nice to have you come along for the whole journey. But I think that's enough about me for the time being, because it would be very easy to talk for an hour about myself and to have you speak about me. But I'm interested to ask you a couple of questions that I wouldn't normally ask if it wasn't in the podcast setting. So I think this is a really good opportunity to maybe learn a little bit more about you. And I'd say you're the one person that probably knows me the best.
Yes.
So now's a good opportunity for me to find out a little bit more about what I don't know about you. So, first of all, a question I've never asked you before. What on earth is it like being a mum?
Well, it's so rewarding. Oh, I'm going to get a bit emotional now.
Oh, my goodness. Maybe this is a bad idea.
It is very, very rewarding. I mean, I've loved every minute of it, to be honest. It's, you know, it's had its ups and downs. But it's scary when you first bring that baby home, because you're responsible for that little being, everything. And it's relying on you so much for food, warmth, shelter, clothing and all the rest of it. But when you started to get interested around about two.
Interesting,
yeah. Okay. I as much as I love babies, to me, that was when you started to get interesting up and about, starting to talk, and then just discovering the world with you, and, you know, as you discovered your shadow and just the little things along the way of, you know, the little funny things you used to say. So it's a worry sometimes. You worry about, you know, when you go out into the big wide world in school and all the things that come with that. But I've enjoyed, you know, sharing those experiences with you that maybe I experienced as a child, like reading books to you that I read as a child, going to places, going to the theatre, going to concerts, introducing you to a whole wide range of things that I'd experienced before and not experienced before. So,
And was there a particular period of my life that, or my upbringing that you enjoyed the most? Was there a year that I was the best me, or that you preferred me the most? Maybe when I didn't answer back or something?
Not really. I have to say, hand on heart, I've enjoyed the whole, and I continue to enjoy the whole experience of being a parent. I suppose, not to hark on about the most difficult time, but when, you know, we suddenly found ourselves getting divorced from your biological father, that was a really tough time. But I think it proved to me that I could do it on my own, I could live on my own. It made me more resourceful. I think I've always been resourceful anyway. Our chief executive at Dimension said that I was a resourceful person. So, I found myself with very little money and supporting you. I had a lot of help from the grandparents. However, it made me have to think differently about what meals to cook. And so everything about the whole experience has, to me, has been... I've learned and grown from it, really.
Have there been any notable changes that have occurred for you as a result of becoming a parent? I know that's probably taken you back quite a long way.
I suppose when you get some spare time, you just don't know what to do with it because it's so unexpected, because it is full on, really. It's, you know, it's as I was working full time as well. It's getting up, getting you ready, telling you 20 times to get your shoes on and despairing because you need to get out the door on time because I had to drop you off at school and then get to work. Then had to leave on time for work. You always feel good. I think as a mum, you always feel guilty. And I've had conversations with my friends who are mums. You feel guilty when you're in work because you think you should be at home. And then when you're at home, you feel guilty because you're not contributing to the household, so to speak, or you feel guilty about your job because you're conscientious about your work. So it's quite difficult getting that balance. I think there needs to be a lot. Well, I think dads play more of a role in that, and you know, Jeremy always, if he was sick and I had an important meeting, he'd ring in and say Stephen's not well and he'd stay at home. And
Jeremy's my stepdad, for those of you who don't know us.
Yeah. So I'd say the things that, it's when you have spare time, you just don't know. It's just a bit of a shock because you don't know how to fill that time.
Yeah.
And it's not enough time to immerse yourself in something, like to start a hobby or start something. It's sort of, you get snippets of time, really.
And of course, everything's changed quite a lot in the 23 years, you know, since I was born to now, not in terms of our life, but in terms of society as a whole. And I suppose it'd probably be a lot easier now to spend 5-10 minutes spare with phones and, you know, YouTube or any type of social media going, really. So I suppose that's one thing that's changed.
I think if you were small now, I think I'd have a lot more concerns about social media and the internet and all of the technology, because I think Facebook wasn't really making an appearance and wasn't the thing to do when you were around. Well, you didn't even want a mobile phone till you were about 14 or 15.
Yeah.
Because you just didn't want one. So.
And even when I got one, it was pretty. It was a flip phone, and it wasn't particularly useful anyway. I don't think it had Snake on. That was probably my main concern. I wasn't happy about that, I remember, at the time.
So I think I think throughout history there's always been something that for parents to worry about.
Oh, really. I'm sure, yeah. If anything, I can imagine it's probably only grown in intensity in terms of what there is to worry about, because instead of that stranger being on the street, and coming across them when it's late at night or something, you can come across them any time of the day, wherever you are, can't you, if you're not careful.
But I think on the flip side now, I mean, when I was a child, we used to go out and play we used to go out in the morning, maybe come home for lunch, and come home when the sun was going down. Our parents had no idea where we were.
Mm.
It probably was the best of times to be a child, I think, looking back. Having watched Back in Time for the weekend, and they did that social experiment on the BBC, and they showed the different generations and what people did with their spare time. Yeah. The 70s seemed to be, you know, it was after the war and people had more disposable income and they were doing more exciting things in their spare time, and they had more spare time. And now with technology in our hands, you could work 24/7 if you wanted to.
Yeah.
You have to be quite disciplined to switch it off.
So, without being rude, hopefully, you were born in the 60s.
Yes.
Raised as a kid in the 70s.
Late 60s.
It's always a touchy subject. And then you seem to harp on quite a lot throughout my life about how good the 80s were. So am I right in saying that's your favourite time?
Oh, yeah, I suppose so. The music was just amazing. It was so different. And, you know, all the new romantics and... it was just the best time to... I spent my money on music, singles, vinyl, as it was back then, and then CDs started to make an appearance. So everybody had a CD player and a Walkman with a CD in. A cassette at the time, that was a cassette. And then
like
they made... Okay. Walkman. But it was the best time for... The music was so diverse, I suppose. My favourite was Duran Duran, and still is to this day. I love them. But I also liked people like the Thompson Twins, Human League, Ultravox, OMD, Jimmy Somerville. All of those. Bananarama. It was Depeche Mode, The Cure. All of those. It was Susie and the Banshees, to the point where I did my makeup like her. And what we used to do with our hair is we used to flip our heads down and get soapy water and then back comb our hair with soapy water in it so it all stood up on end. And the black eyeliner and the leggings with the coloured socks over the top. So it was... And plastic earrings. It was... And everybody was... I look at the... No disrespect to anybody now, but I look at the girls now and they've all got long straight hair and their bags and a certain way, and nobody's really an individual, but you could be quite individual... Well, sort of quite individual without being... There wasn't a set thing to be.
Okay.
So, But yeah, the 80s were good. And that's when I started going nightclubbing in the 80s because I was, late teens.
And I'd happily say you're nearly 80, if not more, percent responsible for my enjoyment of dance music today and my enjoyment for going and spending my money on going to see music and when CDs were a thing, going out and buying CDs and spending all my pocket money on that. And so I think you're probably a lot responsible for that, really. Mm. Can you see any other elements of yourself in me?
Oh, all the time.
Because I know we did a personality test from some training that you did in work.
Oh, yeah, Myers-Briggs,
A couple of months ago.
Yeah.
And actually turned out that we had exactly the same personality traits.
Preferences. Yes, yeah, we did.
I mean, they don't run in families necessarily, do they?
No, they don't, no.
So, I mean, that's probably one of the reasons why we get on quite well anyway,
I imagine, because our preferences are quite the same. Yeah. I think you're quite bonkers like me. So, like, I sit and think, I wonder how many words I've actually spoken throughout the whole of my life.
Give us some more insights. Any more of those?
Oh, something happened the other day and we knew what we were on about. It was like, when we were in London and we went to see Jungle, which you took me to for my birthday, we said something like, we wondered where all these people... there's lots of people in the world or something, or I wonder how many people are doing what we're doing right now and things like that, or thinking what we're thinking right now.
So to any of my friends that are listening, this is the person you have responsible for all of my ridiculous sayings and things that I come out with. I think they do sometimes wonder what on earth I'm going on about. But I think it's simple things like, you know, when I'm sat on the toilet, I'm thinking, oh, I wonder how many people are going for a poo right now. Or when...
Stephen!
When I'm sleeping, I'm thinking, how, you know, I wonder what proportion of the world are sleeping right now. Or, you know, who... You know, loads of weird and wacky things like that.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Anything else then that you think we have particularly in common?
I think we've got the same values, probably, about being kind to people and about being, you know, I always think you never know what people are going through is my thought. So when people are cross and maybe, you know, irate, a bit tetchy, you don't know what's going on for them, really, do you? Because we've all got, I look at, this is, I suppose, again, this is the thing, I sit and look at when I'm on my train journey to work and think, I wonder what's going on for all these people. You know, and we're all trying to muddle through, really, I think. And the world needs to be a bit kinder. So, in my role in work, I work in HR, human resources, and I'd say a lot of my job has increased in people who come to see me who are struggling for whatever reason. I don't know where all this pressure has suddenly come from. But it's very sad, and I think the world just needs to be a bit kinder.
What time scale are we talking about in terms of that increase then? Is it over the last year or over the last 10 years?
Oh, no, I'd say over the last 15 years, I'd say, I've seen an increase in that sort of thing, HR. But you see, back in the day, that's what it used to be, the history of personnel and human resources. It did start off as a welfare sort of role in the workplace. And I think we're seeing some of that return.
Okay.
So I've done a mental health first aid course in work, which has been really, really beneficial to me because I'm able to signpost people to various, you know, methods of support. And also it's helped me recognise some of the mental health issues people might be experiencing. So, yeah, I mean, they say to me in work, I might not be good at spreadsheets and things, but my boss has commented that, you know, I've got different skills in different areas, and I think by being, I like to think I'm a good listener, and I do take on board and try and support people, really, in my work.
So for those of you who don't know what HR or human resources is, can you explain that a little bit more?
So human resources, well, it was back in the day, it was called personnel. So it's a team of people in the workplace who deal with, I describe it as the life journey of an employee, really. So it goes from literally hiring to firing and everything in between. So we might get involved with interviews and getting people in through the door and making sure they, you know, they're on the payroll, make sure they get paid. And then any changes that take place, if they get a promotion, go on maternity leave, change their hours, flexible working, restructures, unfortunately, and all the legislation that goes around that, maybe taking on, acquiring other organisations, and that's called a 2P transfer, so they come with their terms and conditions, and then to people leaving. And then we deal with employee relations, which is, I describe as the hard part of the job, which is people dealing with grievances, bullying and harassment cases, absence, disciplinaries when people have, you know, done something that's a misconduct issue. Mm. But there's nice things like the training and a nicer side to it. So okay. It's very varied, and it's a people job, so which, you know, I like people. So
I'm curious then, with that in mind, what happens if someone that works in HR needs someone that works in HR?
Well, it's we all really support each other as a team, I'd say, because we all, you know, we all go out and people expect us to have the answers, and we haven't always got the answers. So we do support each other a lot, I'd say. We talk to each other about, you know, cases and how we're feeling, and I suppose by having the knowledge of you know your employee rights, I suppose that helps.
And so I suppose you can kind of treat, and or from my point of view as a physio, you can kind of treat and diagnose yourself almost.
Yes, yeah, yeah. You know what's right and what's wrong and what doesn't feel right, and if you're, and I suppose that because the people I work with are in trained the same way, and they know that it tends to be really fair, I'd say, in the workplace. I haven't had any cause to raise a grievance or raise any issues, or, you know, I haven't... I suppose I understand I wouldn't ask for anything unreasonable, because I know there's a business reason usually for why things happen.
Okay. So that's your work life then?
That's my work life.
How you spend 9 to 5. What do you do, say, 5 till 10? Or
lots of things.
Or 7 till 9, should we say? What about in your spare time? What do you enjoy doing?
I like a lot of variety. I was in 3 days last week and watched the telly most nights, and I was bored out of my head by day 3, I think. Whilst I like to watch a bit of television, I need to be busy. I need to keep my hands busy. So I do a lot of crafting. Sophie Hale, who was on a previous podcast, I've been to one of her crochet workshops.
Big up A Boat Full of War, if anyone's interested.
Which was fantastic, because it's opened up a whole new world to me of things I can do. So I like to keep my hands busy. I go onto a book group and a craft group. And I see a lot of my friends. I like keeping in touch with people. I get a lot from being with a variety of different people. I think you get different things from different people. Mm. So my friends are quite diverse. I have 2 long-standing friends who live in Wales, because we moved from Wales when Stephen was 5 to be here in Berkshire. So I've known my friend Helen and Sarah since we were 4. We went to school together in infants. And that's fantastic, having lifelong friends like that. So, and I get a lot from them, because Sarah likes to go trampoline around for a walk and like sort of markets and craft fairs and things like that. And Helen likes the more mainstream type of shopping, and sort of knows about a lot of celebrities and makeup and things like that. And I don't really,
more girly girl type of things.
Yeah, she's a more girly girl, but she's fantastic at finding things for me to wear that I wouldn't consider wearing. And Sarah and I enjoy sort of talking about, you know, being a bit more eco and things like that. And recently we went up to the Greenham Common Tower, a control tower that's opened up, the cafe up there, which was really fascinating. And Sarah actually knows somebody who was at the peace camp there. So so she talked to me about that and her experiences.
That's actually something I don't really know a lot about, and that's obviously happened before I came into the world. So for my benefit, and potentially for anyone listening who doesn't know what you're talking about, can you put us in the picture of that?
Yeah, so when I lived in Wales, Newbury seemed to kind of always be on the news. So back in the, I think it was the 80s, I didn't quite take all the detail in. And as I'm getting older, I'm finding it difficult to retain facts. So it started from Wales. So basically at Greenham Common, there were nuclear weapons housed in case of a nuclear war. Because there was a bit of a Cold War going on, there was a Cold War going on between America and Russia, and us and Russia. And, you know, the political landscape was quite tetchy, really, and it was who's got their finger on the button. Hence Frankie Goes to Hollywood and Two Tribes. That is based on the Cold War, when two tribes go to war.
Oh, right.
For those of you who didn't know that. So there was a group of women in South Wales who marched across the Severn Bridge and marched all the way to Greenham and set up a peace camp and tried to, very often tried to get into Greenham Common to disrupt what was going on up there. And in fact, one of my teachers and somebody my mother taught with at Crossy Killiog Comprehensive School was part of the march. So it sort of, it started in Wales, so it ended up here. So, and they stayed for a long, long time. But I thought the Greenham Common Control Tower is representative of both, sort of the military and the peace camp, and sort of the history of it. So, but it's a good place to go. And they do homemade cake, and it's really good to walk around. And I hadn't actually been to that part of Greenham Common, and I've lived here for 18 years now. And part of the runway is still there. And what I didn't realise, it was actually a military base as part of the Second World War.
So even before the Cold War.
Yeah, right. So it's got a lot of history. So,
and more recently, it's been used, some of the bunkers have been used for filming parts of Star Wars in as well.
Absolutely, yes. I forgot about that.
I don't know if anything else has been filmed up there, but it is an ideal spot for that kind of thing, actually.
So that weekend when Sarah came up, I felt, and then we came and helped you move the boat, and I showed her West Mills in Newbury. And I'd never taken her to that part of Newbury before. And I because the sun was out and it was unusually really warm for the end of February, I felt like a tourist in Newbury, which was lovely. So by having visitors, I'm always sort of exploring different things. And I love travelling. I love travelling. That would be my... If I won the lottery, I would. That would be my thing that I would do. I love experiencing different places, different things, seeing the world from a different perspective, really.
Where's the best place you've been to?
Well, Iceland is up there, but New York, I was blown away with New York. I don't know why, I'm not really a massive city fan, but it's just so amazing. It's just so diverse and busy, and I think because it's in so many different films, you just turn the corner and you think, wow. And just the scale of it. But Venice was pretty good, because that's just like a film set, really. That's a bit weird, Venice. It felt like a film set on water, but with all the little bridges.
Another place where lots of things have been filmed.
Venice. Yes, yeah. So, but I think Iceland is my absolute favourite. It's so different to anywhere else. It's... It was freezing cold, but there were lots of heat rising up out of the ground. The scenery was spectacular. The people were amazing. We had a wonderful time. Saw the Northern Lights.
Yeah.
So I feel very privileged and very lucky to have experienced all the experiences I've done. But I'm determined. There's a determination in me to do these things.
You're very, much like myself, you're very much a bucket listy type of person, aren't you?
Yes.
So, other than travelling to certain places, I know you did a bit of a project, I think when it was the year after you were 50, was it?
Yes.
You chose to try and fit 50 things and tick 50 things off your bucket list.
Yes.
In the year of turning 50. Firstly... Remind me, what were some of those things that you ticked off then?
So let me just say, a lot of people have adopted that idea from... I did get the idea from somebody else, but having shared that, lots of people have asked me for their 40th birthdays or 30ths or 50ths to share my list. So there were some things to help other people, some things I personally wanted to achieve, and some things that I've been meaning to do for a long time. So give a meal to a homeless person was on there. Learn to crochet was on there. Listen to a podcast, and here I am on one. Listen to an audiobook, because that is quite difficult to try and concentrate on audiobooks. I find I keep falling asleep, or when I'm doing something else, I find I switch off from it. Go to San Francisco. Go to see a music concert. You're asking me now. Yes. What else? Well, because I put music concert on there, we ended up going to see the Bollywood Brass Band at the Corn Exchange, which I would never have probably entertained that, but they were amazing. They were really, really different. They had all the Indian Bollywood dancers on, and that was a really good evening. So the list was about... sort of stretching myself and finding things that I wouldn't normally do and experience. So, but we kind of started doing something similar quite a while ago, whereas on New Year's Day we would write a list of things we wanted to achieve for the year, or a list of places. I suppose as I'm getting older, I'm realising that actually I'm not immortal. Life is very short, and there's things and experiences that I want to... explore, really. So I've nearly ticked everything. I didn't quite finish the list, but it's not a biggie. It's, I've sort of continued to add to it, if anything.
So, you've got more things on there now than you did when you started ticking things off. That's cool. And actually, it reminds me of a little day or evening I did with my mate Ben Morris, actually, who features on one of the earlier podcasts. And we did an evening where we rolled the dice to decide what we did with our time. This, I think this was an idea I got from Yes Theory, which is a really big YouTube channel online, which is all about pushing yourself outside of your comfort zone and trying new things, or really just doing wacky things that you would never think about trying before. And so really we spent I did a bit of research and found, I think it was 6 ideas of things that we could do that evening, which were completely different to anything we'd ever do otherwise, you know, to try and break up the monotony of going through the motions. And actually it worked so well. And I found some things like there was an ocean short film project going on at the Hexagon in Reading, and then there was a gong, a sound immersion session, which I'll get onto in a minute. And then we also picked things like laser tag, or going to see this comedy at a theatre. And actually, we, from the 6 things we chose, we actually decided that we really liked the sound of the gong and sound immersion thing. So we kind of cheated and we decided we were going to do that. However, it wasn't available at the time because all the tickets had sold out. So we rolled the dice and we ended up going to do laser tag, and off we went. We rang up and found out where we could do it, and went and did laser tag. And that was such a good night. We went, I think we had a couple games of bowling and did laser tag. And like I say, you know, it takes you places that you wouldn't, you know, you wouldn't go otherwise.
Yeah.
But actually, we went on to go and try out this gong sound immersion healing thingy-majiggy afterwards, because it sounded so, so interesting. Actually, we had very different experiences. And it's something I'd like to ask you about, because you've more recently been and tried it out, haven't you?
Oh, it's the best thing I've ever done, I think, from a meditation point of view. So my mind is very busy, and I find it really difficult to switch off. So from a mental health point of view, it can be quite exhausting. And I do have difficulty sleeping at night, which is quite often I read my book at 3 o'clock in the morning. So because I work for the NHS, I found out that the lady running the gong bath was doing a free event for the 70th year of the NHS to celebrate. So I went along to West Berkshire Community Hospital, and the sounds, the vibrations just go through you, and it is, that word describes it perfectly, it is immersive.
Hmm.
Because you just lie there and it just waves, wave after wave.
Let's take it back a little bit and set the scene about what do you get when you go to a sound or gong immersion
thingy. So you'd have to take a yoga mat or a mat or something to lie on, so you're comfortable, and a blanket, so settled down. And the gong is huge. It's massive. Literally, I'm spreading my arms out wide here.
You can't see this because we're recording audio and not video. But
imagine a big, big gong, like on the some end of some film.
Some like martial art film or something like
No, they used to do it at the end of films or the beginning of the films to say, oh, is it MCM or whatever? And they used to hit the gong. But it's huge. And the people running the session are very practiced at doing the sounds. So you literally lie down, get comfortable really, whichever position you're most comfortable. I closed my eyes. And then they do sort of soft noise, really, at its peak it's really, really loud.
Mm. It's not just whacking the gong, is it? It's like tapping and gently going around.
Oh, yeah.
And it is mad actually how it moves from being a sound to actually it does almost create a physical feeling and a sense of physical presence in the room. It's, you know, you can, I felt when I did it as if the gong was moving around me, moving around my head. And actually I was quite surprised when I opened my eyes at the end to realise that the gong hadn't moved at all. And it was just the sound that moved around the room. And actually it comes and goes in waves, really. It builds up into like big crescendos and then dips down again. And
well, it's interesting because you say that, because I went to a sound meditation on Tuesday night this week, and she was explaining to us that sound has to go through an object for it to be a sound. So in space there isn't any sound because it's just a void.
Okay.
So that's the physics bit over.
Thanks for that scientific detail.
I was terrible at physics in school. In fact,
I couldn't tell.
In fact, I quite often reminisce on a Friday afternoon because I used to have double physics. And I quite often sit in work on a Friday afternoon and think this is better than double physics, even if it is work. But anyway, going back to the gong bath and the meditation sounds. And it's for me, it's definitely the vibrations. And we did chanting on Tuesday, and I actually held my hand up to feel the vibrations in my throat when we were humming. But I'd say the gong bath is something I definitely want to do again. It's definitely my thing, because I actually saw colours. She said some people have you go into a bit. I felt like I was in a bit of a trance, because when I woke up, she said, "Did you go to sleep?" I said, "I'm not sure. I'm not sure whether I was asleep or not. I really don't know." But what I would say is, because you're concentrating on the sound, it just empties your head out of everything else, because I'm listening to the sound and I'm not thinking about anything else.
I suppose that's essentially what it boils down to, isn't it, in terms of meditation. It's concentrating on one thing, and just one thing only, so that your brain isn't then all over the shop and cluttered with thoughts and distractions. Yeah, I suppose that's...
It had a rest for an hour.
Yeah.
Because it is a muscle, and it probably does need to have a rest, but, you know, is it a muscle, Mr. Medical Man?
Do you know what? I don't think it is a muscle, sorry. No, it's definitely an organ, and not a muscular organ.
Well, you probably do need to rest it at some point.
Oh, yeah.
It does need a rest.
I think it consumes something crazy, like 25% of your... of your energy, like your calories.
Right.
Thinking burns a lot of energy.
Why am I not size 8 then? I think sound meditation is probably one of the best forms of meditation for me. And I only discovered meditation, I'd say, about 6 or 7 years ago, and I'm not very well practiced at it, but it does, I find it does help. But I have found on Insight Timer, which is an app on my phone, there is a gong,
like a setting or audio clip.
Audio clip, so which does help. But so I do that. I read a lot. I've got about 10 books on the go at the moment.
How on earth do you keep track of what you're doing and where you are?
I suppose I've got a very haphazard life, I suppose. Dipping in and out of lots of different things at lots of different times, I guess. Seeing lots of different people, and which is quite interesting, really, because Jeremy is the complete opposite. So he's probably my grounding, I suppose, to keep me grounded and a bit more... stable, I guess.
Yeah.
Because he goes along with me. He's fine with it all, but he kind of is a bit more
brings you back to.
Let's have a bit of routine and a bit of normality, I guess. I've always read loads, and joining a book group is such a good idea, because it stretches you, and you get introduced to books you probably wouldn't entertain the idea of reading. So I'm in the middle of our book which was for December, I think it was, for book group.
Okay. And we're now in March.
it's not unusual for me not to finish the book. I have actually gone to book group just so I can see the people that actually sat somewhere else while they talked about the book for 10 minutes and then rejoined them, so I didn't know the ending. So, but I'm reading A Gentleman in Moscow by, Amor Towles? Which is such a beautiful, beautiful book. It's not what you think it's about. It's about a gentleman that was a count before the revolution, Russian Revolution, and then he's under house arrest in the hotel where he lives, been living. And it's just all little snippets about, you know, just about his life in there, really. And the descriptions of the furniture, and it's such an uplifting book, and it's, oh, it's beautiful, beautifully written.
That's lovely. I'm very much looking forward to reading it, because it's something that you recommended to me earlier and said it's one of the best books that you've ever read, which is quite astounding because of how many books you have read.
Yeah.
Before we get too far away from something you talked about earlier, I want to go back to Jeremy and find out a bit more about how you met and what all that process was, because, believe it or not, back, was it 18 years ago or now, my parents, Wendy and Jeremy, actually met on the internet.
We did!
But I'm not sure whether the internet even existed back as long as that, but...
Oh, dear. So, here was the thing. So, I found myself single and divorced, a huge life-changing experience, sold the house and all the rest of it, went back to work, had you, work and Stephen. I was sort of, didn't have a lot of free time, didn't have a lot of opportunity to go out and meet people. And back in the day, there were chat rooms. I think they're all closed down now. I was 32 at the time, so now you know how old I am, roughly. And I went...
32 plus 18, isn't it?
Yeah. Or something like that. Well, yeah.
And a bit more.
And a tiny bit more. And we met in... So they were all different chat rooms, so like there was some called Married and Looking.
Wow.
That
existed.
Yeah, that existed. So I went into 30s romance. And people would just come and talk to you online, a bit like texts, I suppose. Well, instant messaging, I guess, and all of that sort of thing. And I spoke to somebody who lived in, I don't know, was it Turkey or something to start with? I was really nervous. You didn't have to sign on, you didn't have to pay, you didn't have to, you know, you just got a profile and away you went, really. And Jeremy was the second person who came to speak to me, and he put ASL, and I thought, what on earth does that mean? And then I worked it out before, and I said, what does this mean? And before he said, I'd worked it out, it was age, sex, location. And then we just got talking, and I said, oh, I'm about 6 minutes away from the M4, and he said, well, I'm about 8 minutes away from the M4, but there was 86 miles in between. And we met, and we went on our first date. I did tell somebody his registration number, where I was meeting him, because, you know, it is. But then you could go home with a stranger from a pub and it could still be a bit dodgy, couldn't it? So I met him and we had a cup of coffee at Lee Delamere Services.
Yeah, so your first date was at a service station.
We then went to Bath, which was lovely.
At that same day?
The same day. Okay. And Jeremy complained because when I dropped him back off at the Delamere Services on the westbound side, he had to drive 7 miles down to turn around and come back, so he had an extra 14 miles on his trip, but he was only joking about that.
What did he do in Bath?
Went and looked at the Weir, and that's where Jeremy said I wasn't quite what he was looking for. And here we are all this time later.
That's reassuring, isn't it?
Yeah, well, you know, it's funny, he was honest. And he did say that we'd been through enough, me and you, and that he wanted to actually make sure that it was the right thing for him to do. And Jeremy is a bit like that. He likes to ponder over things for a few days.
Thinker, isn't he?
But once he's committed, he is absolutely committed to something, I've noticed over the years. So, which was quite kind of him, really, because he, you know, could have just said, well, you know, go out a few times and then... broken my heart all over again. And then we went to... Oh, that was right. We went into a pub and had a drink, and he said, could you buy me a bottle of wine? And I was a bit tetchy at that point and said, what's the point in buying me a bottle of wine? Because I don't want to drink it on my own. That was after he'd said, not quite what I'm looking for. And then we carried on having a nice day. And it was like, the way I looked at it, I always try, my glass is always half full. I thought, well, I've got a day out, haven't I? A day out in Bath, it's lovely in Bath, with some company, somebody I haven't met before. And then we carried on talking afterwards. Just happened to be on in the chat room now and again. We had each other's email address, and then he'd ring me up now and again, and it kind of went from there, really. So, and I think because we're both only children, we both like to do our own thing now and again, but we always regroup. So, yeah, we get on really well. He loves travelling with me, my travel buddy, as I call him. Yeah, he likes a bit of peace and quiet, and I like his sense of humour, which is quite dry. Sometimes he's a bit too cryptic, I don't get it, but, you know, it's it works. It works. So, yeah, we moved to Berkshire, and here we are.
What was that like then? Because all I can remember is being in the car and full of stuff, and looking into the back seat and seeing our cat in a cat basket, surrounded all around, above and below and to the sides with cases and boxes and stuff. So my memory of it, that time of life, is very blurred, really. So
it was blooming scary because Jeremy had to get on the train because there wasn't enough room for him in the car, and I'd given up work. We'd given up the house that Mum and Dad had helped us rent. They actually weren't very happy about me moving, so the relationship with them was a bit strained, I suppose, is the phrase. And I thought, what if I get to Berkshire and it's all been a big con? But that only went through my mind for five minutes. I think it took all my courage to do that, because I was leaving behind everything I knew after 32 years, and taking you, me and our cat here. And I had to put all my faith in the fact that it would work out. But Jeremy was very reassuring. And when we got here, he'd already made... The removal men had already got here. And we rented somewhere to start with. And he'd made the beds. And then he said, right, what pizza are we all having? And then he organised... He said, I got the kettle out. And as soon as I got here, I thought, it's going to be fine. But it was scary starting a new job and moving. But it's funny, isn't it? Because I've made loads of friends since, but then I think I would do that wherever I went. But I think the scariest thing is trying to find, and this sounds really strange, but all those little familiar things that you take for granted, like a good hairdresser. Somebody in our family passed away just after I'd moved. I didn't know where the good florist was. Just things like that, really, that you, like, you know, registering at the doctors and all of that malarkey, and then choosing a house in, you know, what's the area like and what are the schools like and all of that, really. But my boss in my first job, she was from Wales, and on my first day, we went out for lunch and she explained a bit about herself. And then she said, right, I want to hear all about you. So she made me feel really welcome. And the rest is, you know, I got invited out to various things with work. And because of you, I made friends. And scouting played a huge part in that because you started... Well, I started helping out with the guides when I got here. Because I've gone through the scouting and guides, you know, girl guides and scouts and all of that when I was young, and Mum and Dad were always involved, and that opened up a whole world of friends and activities, and then I became a leader for scouts, but I don't do that anymore, but it's been nice to give something back because I got a lot out of being a girl guide. It's made you very self-sufficient and gave you a lot of life skills, I think.
Definitely. Yeah. That's what brought us up to date, really, I think. And I've certainly filled in a few gaps for me, which is good. What I'd like to really end on, I think, is reflecting and figuring out, if you had to go back and speak to, say, a teenage version of yourself, someone who didn't know a lot about the world, maybe had a lot of worries and was trying to find yourself and figure out what the world was all about, what advice would you give yourself?
Have faith in yourself. I've done a lot of worrying. I think people do. And sometimes it's overtaken things that was needless. I mean, you don't know things are going to work out at the time, but just have faith that they will work out and spend less time worrying about it, about being made redundant or about, you know, making decisions. Yeah, now I'm older, I've trained my brain not to worry so much about things, and just have faith in the fact that you are resourceful, and be grateful. A great believer in gratitude really grounds you. Be grateful for, you know, having a pillow and a duvet and a warm house and food on the table. And be grateful for those essential things that you've got, because there are a lot of people in the world who haven't even got that. So I think, yeah, don't worry so much.
Very wise words. Thank you very much for coming on today's podcast.
Thank you for having me at long last.
I think it's quite apt that actually today happens to be International Women's Day.
Oh, it does.
So to have the best woman in my life on the podcast. Best woman so far. No, in all seriousness though, you know, you've been massively supportive through all the ups and downs in my life, and I'm so grateful to have you as a mum. And so thank you for sharing all of that with me and spending an hour chatting about it all. And just one note about the podcast in general, we're really trying to expand over the next couple of months, and as a result we've invested in a new microphone, so that's probably why the audio sounds a bit different to how it normally does. But with the new podcast mic, it's going to allow us to be a lot more mobile, have a lot more freedom in terms of getting guests on, maybe a bit haphazardly, as in when we feel like it. Also, taking the podcast to someone, rather than having to lug around lots of equipment, now we have a really small mic that allows us to be a lot more versatile. And I hope that that's going to open up a lot more opportunities. So I'm looking forward to the future episodes that are going to come out as a result of that. So thank you very much for everyone that's listened. Thank you, Mum, for coming and joining us. And
thank you.
As always, take care of yourselves, and we'll see you on the next episode. Take care.